Isn't that strange, Owen? They're not making a sound.
Well, we can't always predict what birds will do. There is normal movement, the passing of herons to and from the feeding grounds, north here on the Halstow and Cooling Marshes. They're deciding to just rise, one or two rising.
Sailing on the wind. Yeah.
Sailing on that northeasterly wind. We've got a greeting ceremony taking place where a heron arrived and on the nest by his mate, and there was an exchange of wing flapping and a greeting call as the other alighted, and they're just settling down now.
This is Britain's largest heron, right? In Northwood Hill. Kent. If we look behind us, we can see both the Thames and the Medway estuaries. A wonderful place for birds which are, as we can see, because they're nesting here in an oak woodland, a mixture of woodland and wetland birds. So what are they?
This is a lovely thing about the herons. If I asked you, is a heron a wetland bird? And you say, yes, of course it is, because it feeds on fish and amphibians and all the rest that we've got in the Cooling and Halstow marshes here. And if you ask people, is it a woodland bird? They would say, no, it can't be, because I go into woods all the time. I walk in woods, never see a heron. Well, we can't deny that it's a woodland bird here. We're seeing 160, 170 pairs nesting in this wood. But the point is that they nest colonially. So a lot of people won't see herons, because only a small proportion of woods in a county will have a heronry. And that's possibly why they think they're not a woodland bird.
Well, whilst the RSPB has given us this special permission today to actually approach and get under the heronry itself, let's do so. This is going to be a carpet of bluebells that we're walking over.
Lovely.
Later
it's
on.
It's a beautiful wood.
The heronry is in a huge oak woodland. Oak trees, I reckon, have got to be a couple of hundred years old or more here. Tell us a little bit about the history of this particular heronry, Owen, because it hasn't been here as long as the oaks have been here.
I don't think it has. Certainly it's been here all this century. The interesting thing is that herons are very sensitive to disturbance. And you can imagine the calamity that happened when, in the northwest of the wood, up until the 70s, they were in elms. They were nesting, all of them, in elm trees. Dutch elm disease came in. Normally that would mean the loss of a heronry. This mob weren't for the moving. They moved down the hill and to the central part, north central part of the wood, into the oaks.
The herons here, Owen, share the wood, as we can hear by this huge rookery that we pass on our way here into the heronry. A competition between rooks and herons?
The herons tolerate other birds, even if they're nesting close by. But there is an element of problem in that if the herons are disturbed, corvids of any kind, whether they're rooks or jackdaws or magpies or whatever, will take eggs and even later young. That's why we're standing back at the moment. We don't want to go too near, but we can still enjoy the passing of the herons to and from the feeding ground as they come in and join their mates.
I don't suppose there's anybody in the world that doesn't know what a heron looks like, not least because if you go to any garden centre these days, you will see plastic effigies of herons sold ostensibly to keep herons away from people's goldfish ponds. So, but for anybody that doesn't know what a heron looks like, describe this one sitting on his or her nest in front of us, Owen.
Here we go. A heron is a big bird. It is a large and noticeable bird. Essentially, it's a mix of white and black and ashy grey, and that's probably the link with the phoenix. I guess any bird that spent 500 years in a pile of ashes would come out looking a bit smoky, and this is essentially the Latin name for heron, is Ardea cinerea, and that's ash coloured.
And as we can see from the birds sailing above us now, a bird with a wingspan of 5-6 feet
5 to 6 feet legs trailing
behind it. Now, legs and beaks change colour this time of the year.
They do.
It's nookie time of the year for herons, and it's all about display and recognition of mates and all that sort of thing. Beaks and legs change from orangey to pink?
In the adult, normally the bill is a yellow colour and the legs are a dull brown. In breeding plumage about this time of year, the iris may go into a brighter orange. The bill will change from the yellow into pink. It changes about this time of year. You'll see a half and half. The base of the bill is pink and the tip will be yellower. The legs too can change into yellow from the dull brown into parts of the leg into yellow and pink.
I hate to mention it, Owen, to a man who's obviously had a lifelong love of herons, but the heron much prized as a table bird in the past.
It was, surprisingly so. I gather they tasted a little better than crane, but not quite as tasty as bittern. And the landowners used to protect them, both for food and for hunting through falconry. So they were much prized on the estate. And they would keep others out, poachers out, and they would pass laws. You weren't allowed to use crossbows or small cannon to kill them. You could only use a longbow in the Middle Ages. So they were protected for the landowners and the titled. But they did eat them, and many household accounts keep records of herons in their kitchens.
The heron, of course, protected by very different laws today. A Schedule 1 species, a seasonal breeder, as we've established. This is their breeding season, as we can tell, because all the time we've been talking, there are birds coming in with huge long branches. Some of them, yeah. Branches even long. Look at this one, coming in,
huge.
Settling to that nest. There's a branch almost twice the length of him or her. Who's responsible for nest building, him or
you.
Her?
Well, they both get involved in the nest building. It's usually the male bird that collects or steals from other nests, I guess, the sticks and twigs, and usually bring them into the female, who will adjust them to her liking. But they share nest building and they also share incubation, so they take turns, shifts, to sit on the eggs when they're laid as well.
But how long will a heron's nest last? Had we come here a month ago, there would have been very few nests and very few herons.
The overall breeding time, where the wood is used for that purpose, is about 3 months or so. Broadly speaking, the egg will be 25 to 30 days before it hatches, and then progressively the young will be fed, and the first flight will be another 2 months. So we're talking about 3 months for that period. Outside the breeding season, this is the interesting thing and why people don't see them in woods. They disperse very quickly after breeding, and they go, and often solitary birds will feed on their own.
A little greeting going on here on our left. The pair's settled back. Now,
yeah.
That pair there is obviously a pair because male or female is greeting the male or female.
Mm-hmm.
Will that be their nest? Would it have been their nest last year?
It may well have been. What happens is, after the winter period, where they've been mainly solitary, feeding on their own, the male will come back first, in February usually, and it will either take over a nest that it had last year, or take over a nest that's there, or decide to produce a new site, and it will start to try to attract a mate by certain calls. We'll try to bring them in, and so the males arrive first, the females will fly around prospecting possible mates, and maybe decide to come down at the call, the awakening call of the male. And they may well use that nest over several years. So they get bigger and bigger, they adjust. If they aren't too heavy to fall down, they'll add each year to the nest. So they become a platform, and they build a big nest.
A big bird, you say, but a lot of feathers. Despite the one that this one sailing above us now has got a 6-foot wingspan, we're talking a bird that only weighs 3 or 4 pounds.
3 or 4 pounds.
It's a lot of feathers flying up
but
there.
It's quite agile. We've seen them come into the tree, and now, although they're mostly on the canopy for ease of entry, some of them are a bit lower down, and they've got to get through quite a few branches of the canopy.
Is there a finite size to a colony like this? Does it get too large and then birds start to split off and go and produce new colonies elsewhere?
The kind of average size is about 20, 25 to 30 pairs. That's the general run of things. But you do get these big ones where the feeding is so good. When we had, for example, the 87 storm in the southeast, one or two heronries were lost, and the heronries broke up. They had to start new heronries, and these satellite ones actually created a rise in the population.
Does the size of colonies vary then?
It can be just one heron's nest in a wood, if it's happy there. But more often, they move towards the 20s and 30s. This heronry was at one time, 10, 15 years ago, up to about 230 pairs. Now, it has reduced, but interestingly, some of the neighbouring colonies down at Maidstone on the River Medway and others around slightly increased. So it's possible that some of the birds moved across.
Adult birds or juvenile birds? What happens to juvenile birds? Presumably this female up here who settled down on her nest, look, you can just see her head above the nest, is now incubating eggs.
Yes.
If she gets a couple of chicks and rears them successfully, what happens to them? Do they stay around the colony or do they go off and found new colonies elsewhere?
At the end of the breeding season, the juveniles will disperse. They will usually leave. But even now, I'm not sure, we may check with the binoculars or telescope, but there's probably a yearling bird there standing outside the nest, and this is what they do. The yearlings don't normally breed until the second year, but on the return of the adults to breeding, the yearlings will actually come in and observe the colony. They will stand aside and watch the behaviours that go on, and the egg laying, and the feeding of the young. And in the second year, they will breed.
Can we just risk going? Because we've been given special permission by the RSPB, and this is your survey, they risk getting just a little closer. I have to say, we've got a little more trusting since we've been this close, because there are now birds, oh, just 20 metres in front of us. Each facing the wind, I notice. This is going to be for launching, isn't it? Because they don't flap to launch, they just, they're up there on the tips of these branches of these oak trees, and to take off, they just set their wings out and just lift effortlessly above the branches. Come on, let's get closer. Some of these nests are enormous. Well, Owen's looking as perplexed as I am for such a large and usually vociferous bird. We've been met by almost silence, Owen. We've walked right now. We are in the thick of things. We are surrounded by this wonderful, wonderful heronry. And believe it or not, we're surrounded by herons. But they're all completely silent, apart from one or two little tiny murmurs as they sailed on this wind when we came in.
If you ask people, do you hear herons make a noise? It's normally that flight call.
Frank.
That loud frank. It's indignant, it's raucous, it's harsh, and it's a lovely noise.
Yeah.
But that's about it. You may have put it up in the garden, and when you got down for breakfast to find it was having your goldfish, and it'll be annoyed, all right. It's disturbed, and it'll make that noise. And that's usually what we hear. At the colony, however, obviously, there are lots of communication. They use calls when they have their dynamic posturing displays, both antagonistic and in their pairing and bonding displays. And there'll
there
be a series of
wing
calls.
Wing flapping and the heads
wing
are flat,
heads go back sometimes. That's an angry call.
Between a little squabble there.
Somebody a little squabble.
Encroached on somebody else's
exactly.
territory.
Exactly. And the other one, the resident bird, didn't like it, so he told them to get off. Often they have a pursuit call too, and that was possibly a mixture of the disturbance call, that frank, and a pursuit call, where if they are really upset, they will chase the intruder and actually take to the air and circle around and see it off with a pursuit call. They have these threat calls, which are part of these displays, where, as you say, they will throw their head back like a bittern. It's called bitterning, where they throw it right back.
Owen is doing the most wonderful heron postures here. You'd have to be seen them to believe. And I'm surprised the male heron hasn't come in and tried to mate with him. It is wonderful. Now, these birds have been off their eggs now for a few minutes, and it's a cold, cold day. I reckon we ought to back off a bit.
I think
though,
we will, and give them some space. We've come back now to the meadow on the north side of the wood, away 200 or 300 yards from the heronry, so we're not in any way disturbing them at this point. We're back in a good position because we're between the wood on the north side of Northwood Hill and the Cooling and Halstow marshes, where at this time of year a lot of feeding goes on. Although they do disperse in all directions, this is a great feeding area, as you can see. We've got a great open area full of ditches and grazing marsh and pools, as you can see, where there are duck as well. And so this is terrific feeding ground for the herons. Frogs will be a particularly juicy item at this time of year. Fish, particularly eels, reptiles, crabs, insects.
Small birds and small mammals as well.
And indeed, and up to the size of a moorhen, coot, and even duck, when the feeding is scarce, they'll go up to.
I watched that one day. I was watching a heron through a pair of binoculars down in Devon, on the Dart estuary there, and there was a heron apparently asleep, standing, typically one-legged, with a pair of moorhens feeding around its feet. And all of a sudden, the heron's neck shot out, up one movement, back a gulp, and the moorhen disappeared.
They will.
It was incredible.
And they'll
sight.
Take teal as well, even. In that,
teal? But
yes.
Now, teal, I know it's our smallest duck, but quite a handful.
Well, if you watch, if a heron passes over those floods full of waders and duck and the rest, they know it's a threat.
Anything, really, including eels. Now, anybody that's ever handled an eel will know what a slimy, slippery customer it can be. But herons seem to be able to do it with such ease, to get their squirming creature up and back into their beak. And then don't they have a special group of feathers to deal with the slime that's left on them?
They do. They have pairs of rudimentary feathers down the breast and the thighs, and I think the rump too. And they're called powder down. And these feathers fray into dust, as it were. So the slimy eel or the slimy fish, they clean off their feathers, which are very important to them, because occasionally they overbalance and fall into ponds, suburban ponds. So they've got to be in good nick. And so they preen the feathers, clean their feathers with this powder down. And then they've also got the pectinated claw, the middle toe, the claw at the end of it, has got serrations on the claw. And in addition to the powder down, which cleans off the worst of the slime, they can then preen the feathers with this comb-like claw.
Well, this one I'm looking through Owen's telescope now is typical heron stance, hunched, neck down in almost the two wings making shoulders of
That's
the heron,
it.
Looking almost straight ahead, one-legged, on its right leg. Now, all herons I've ever seen standing on one leg stand on their right leg. Is that true? Is that a true observation, or do they change legs?
I've got my doubts about that.
Part of the BTO work, the British Trust for Ornithology, and the RSPB work at this heronry and other heronries is to climb the nests and put rings around the ugliest chicks in the world. You have to say it, they are ugly chicks.
They are pretty ugly.
They are. In order to study their migration.
Yes.
Do our British herons migrate at all?
Because of the Gulf Stream, we are fortunate in that our herons tend not to migrate. They tend to be resident. There is movement within the British Isles in winter, sometimes from here in England or the east of England to westwards towards the southwest or Ireland. But if we generally believe that our birds are resident and stay.
Where I come from in Hampshire, we call it Frank.
Frank.
Onomatopoeic of,
yes.
of the noise, its alarm call Frank as it goes above it.
That's
here
it.
In Kent,
certainly from the ancient of days, heronshaw, maybe coming from the French éronce for the young herons. So in books you will see them referred to actually as cranes. There was a lot of interplay between crane and heron, and indeed in Gaelic, one of the names is Cora for crane, grain. And that means deformed crane.
Well, it's a bit unkind.
Well, it's a bit unkind, but it's illustrative as well, isn't it? In Scotland too, we call them skinny malinky long legs, for obvious reasons.
Yeah, there's another fisherman's story about heron's legs and boiling water. Have you heard that one?
Yes, yes. Well, they thought that because they were so good at fishing, they first of all, that the legs had magical qualities. And so they actually used to spread bits of heron's legs around the fishing grounds to bring the fish in. Don't think that worked. There is a story, though, that herons in the heronry, they post sentinels. You heard this story? They post sentinels, and on their one leg, as they're roosting, at roost during night time, and they, in their other leg, their non-standing leg, they clutch a little stone. And if they begin to fall asleep, the claw relaxes and drops the stone and wakes the heron up. And that story was believed for quite a few years.
But it's a nice story. And the good news is that we can look forward to having the company of the herons, whether it be in our garden ponds or here in this lovely wild place, for the future, Owen.
I think it's good news. We're up to about 10,000 pairs plus in Britain. They've been around in history for 50 million years, that kind of species, from the Eocene period. And I think the way things are going, we can see them for a few years yet.